Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheel and Dealer Radio. We took a week off, but we're back and we have an extra large edition for all of you to enjoy. We have not just our regular panel, but our favorite substitute as well. Joining us, starting off, we have the sidekick eternal of Wheel and Dealer Radio. We have Ben Daniels. Ben, how's it going over in sidekick land?
Oh, it's going great. I have nothing to complain about.
Just backing people up.
Just here to support the fine work that the rest of you do.
Well, it's good to know you're good for something. Next up, we have the veteran of the podcast coming to us live from Scarface's mansion in Miami. We have Brian. Brian, how's it going?
It's great. The mansion is getting its pool resurfaced right now, and the tiger enclosure is getting cleaned out as we speak.
Do you have any cocaine left after Harry Kane's injury?
No. I'm waiting on another season of Narcos, and I think that's when they ship the next round.
So. All that paste. Next up, we have the internet's most famous evil numbers wizard. We have Michael Cayley. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I was just thinking that if Jansen like really takes off, we have to play two strikers. We have Kane, and he can be cocaine.
That's why we have you on the podcast, Michael.
I'm here for you guys.
That's why we
and
have
then
you.
And then you add Lamella, you have Coco Kane.
Ben, delete your account. Okay, and finally, we have our replacement evil numbers wizard, who doesn't know anything about numbers, but he sounds like he does. We have Vince coming to us live from Brooklyn. Vince, how's it going?
It's going all right. I'm looking forward to possibly doing the Cayley impression with Michael present for the first time ever tonight.
Could be awkward yet delightful, so I'm looking forward to that as well. It'll be like an episode of The Office if it was all online with only Americans and talking about English soccer, which is very specific. That probably happened in the 60s and no one watched. Anyway, we have not one, not two, but three games to talk about. While we were on our little mini break, Spurs won 4-0. It's been a while. Against Stoke. We lost 2-1 to Monaco, and we beat Sunderland 1-0. Let's start off with Stoke. Ben, would it be too much to say this was Heung-min Son's coming out party for Spurs?
I mean, he really tied their back line into knots, and it was really...
Oh, man.
This is embarrassing already.
Just poured candle wax all over their defense? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. No, I mean... Look, I think Son has had coming out parties many times. Like, when he debuted last season, he hit the ground running and he was on fire.
I don't think he had any performances as good as this. Not that he was bad last season. I'm not saying that, but...
I don't know. I may disagree with that, but yes, this is the first time we've seen him be really good in a while. Like, after his early burst of form, he got injured, and then we never really saw the best version of Son again. And I think having a good Heung-min Son is one of the keys to our season, because last year we really fell apart when it came down to, you know, our depth players. You know, if Son is our fourth choice in that three-man attacking midfield and he's going to play like this, we're in great shape. I thought he was just fantastic. He was great against Sunderland. He was incredible. And I'm really excited to see the Son that we were hoping for when we bought him.
I mean, the technique on both of those goals was beautiful. I mean, on that first one, I mean, he takes both of them first time, but on that first one, to just cushion it exactly in the right way to direct it. I don't think there are a lot of other players on Spurs that could have scored that goal. The second one, you know, just letting it run across his body and being able to take that on the first touch and with just rip it like he did, I think maybe maybe Kane could have done that, maybe Lamella, but I mean, it's just he is one of the most technically sound players on the team, and it's when he's on like that, it's so awesome to watch.
Well, you could really see there were some reports after I think this week's game that apparently Son asked to leave and go back to Germany, presumably to Wolfsburg, this summer after he came back from the Olympics, and Pochettino really convinced him to stay. And you can see why. I'm presuming he's going to expect an expanded role in the team. Vince, let's just for the sake of this conversation and the health of my soul, assume that Harry Kane is healthy. He's going to get rotated, but where do you see him getting used for this team? I mean, do you see him Champions League, regular league, just depending on the opponent?
I'm not super sure that it's going to – I think we even see Pochettino talk about how he's not going to be rotating like in the like kind of like 11 on, 11 off style. But like Son's such a direct player and he's such a direct runner and he'll take players on that, you know, I think he's a nice kind of like, I don't know, counterbalance to guys like Eriksen and Lamella. Whereas we see, you know, that role that, Dele Alli has kind of like more of a direct vertical player, taking people on and, you know, playing in behind Harry Kane. I wouldn't mind seeing him play there if he was to play with Eriksen and Lamella. Now, obviously, if Ali wouldn't be playing in the middle, that'd be an opportunity to put Eriksen back in to the center where, you know, he's excelled before. But I would be curious to see him kind of in that whole playing off, you know, theoretical Harry Kane, you know, which we know is injured right now.
So Son was great in that game, and he had a really good game against Sunderland too, which we'll talk about in a minute. But he wasn't the only player that was good in that game. There was also Christian Eriksen, who totally sucks, right, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, there was a few games where he made some bad passes, so he must be trash in the last 3 years of taught us nothing.
He's not like Vandervaart, who bled for the shirt and also couldn't run or pass all that regularly, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. I don't know, Eriksen seems to have turned a corner, probably, maybe partly because he's getting paid now.
One thing I wonder about is sort of just thinking about like variance is if you've got a guy like Eriksen where the things that he does, the greatest value that he provides to the team is in making near perfect passes through very tight spaces. And if we, and so I wonder how much that is like finishing that, like you can be a really good striker and do all of the things up until you finish and then you don't score the goal because it's just really, really hard to score. To some degree, it's just really, really hard to play slide rule passes. I think that Eriksen was struggling in some other ways as well, but some of the issues with his passing, I think that like those parts of the game are going to go in and out because they're so hard, because there's so much variance in those like 3, 4, 5 key passes you need to make a game. I think everyone expected he would come back around into form, and it's clear that he's going to do it.
Well, everyone, but some segments of Spurs fandom. But do you think he was doing anything different, or you think what you were talking about? It just sort of things started clicking for him in these last few matches.
It wasn't obvious to me that there was that he was put in some sort of different position. I think that Pochettino has basically just showed trust in him. Like, you're Christian Eriksen, you're going to be running our attack, you're going to be on the ball. And he's continued to do those things.
Well, I'm glad to have the Eriksen that we all know and love back, or at least it seems that way. He's played very well the last few games.
You know, real quick, we talked about this a little bit before the pod about Luka Modric, about he was very obviously good for Spurs and is now obviously one of, if not the best midfielder in the world. I kind of wonder if, God forbid, we ever lose Christian Eriksen, the Spurs fans that don't really appreciate what he brings to the table every week, you know, will finally wake up to the fact that he does things that are just amazing and makes them look so easy, you know, that we really, really take for granted.
Well, think about how Eriksen really plays for this team. He's making hockey assists for goals, which is the assist before the assist. He's, you know, really snapping our press into action and turning defense into attack in a way that no one else on this team really can do because, like Michael said, his passes are so precise and so good, and he makes them with so, you know, he doesn't need a lot of time to make a pass that excellent. I think you're right, Ben. I think, you know, he does these excellent things that aren't goals or assists all the time, And it's going to be one of those things where, A, we're not going to know how much we missed him until he was gone. And, B, if he does leave Spurs, it's probably going to be for a pretty big team. And he's probably going to be playing with some pretty extraordinary players. And it might be even more evident when he's, you know, got a guy like, just for instance, Ronaldo or Messi or whoever turning those passes into goals. I think it will be a very pronounced loss that we won't realize how good we had it until he's gone, which is going to be sad. But hopefully he'll never leave because we just signed him to a nice little extension, and you know there's no obvious place for him to go right now. Hopefully that we would sell to. So hopefully it stays that way.
I was just gonna say, like, what has been done to us as Spurs fans for us to sign him like 2 weeks ago and be talking about selling him at this very moment?
Luka Modric, Gareth Bale, Terry Sheringham. Teddy, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Typical American.
We're going to get tweets about that.
Yeah, probably not. So, we didn't just play Stoke this week. We played Monaco, which is a pretty big game for Spurs, not only because like 85, 90,000 Spurs fans went to go see it at Wembley, but this is our first game back in the Champions League after like 6 years. Brian, this is pretty cool, right? No, despite the result, it was pretty exciting to see that team walk out to that stupid anthem, right?
It was great. Yeah, it was. I mean, the atmosphere, I don't think you can have any complaints about. The fans sung the whole match. It was loud, even after Monaco scored. It was cool. I think my Spurs fandom was still kind of in its like early stages at the last time we were there. Like I'd been in it for a few seasons at that point, but I didn't really grasp just how hard it was going to be for us to continue to play in the Champions League every year. I just thought, oh, this is a thing now. And now I know that that's not even remotely true. And so I appreciated it much more, and it was so cool, like you said, even to hear that stupid anthem as they walked out, and it was great.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Brian. When I was I think it was my first year as a Spurs fan, the year they were in the Champions League, and I really didn't appreciate how much fun and how cool it was to be there. And this year, you know, I think hopefully they'll play as well, but I think I'm going to enjoy it a lot more because, you know, it's just really exciting to see this team in that venue.
But just think that at the time when we were last there, like, we'd been telling ourselves as Spurs fans for so long that this was where we belonged. Like, we'd been telling ourselves that there was no reason why we shouldn't be challenging for fourth place in the Champions League and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then we did it, and we're like, yes, this is it. We did it. Never again will we be out of the Champions League. We're going to continue to do this.
And then Man City got a lot of money.
Yeah, and then it just didn't – it never came off. And now, you know, we're in it after – we didn't have to go through qualifying stages. We qualified directly from the league for finishing third, unfortunately. And I don't know. It just means more to me as a fan this time around, I think.
So, Vince, I want to talk to you about the game itself first. Game itself wasn't as cool as just the sort of atmosphere surrounding it, right? Spurs played really well, but still got sucker punched twice and weren't quite able to make it up. Are you concerned by this performance?
I'm not concerned about it. I'm always concerned about it when we lose, like, in the sense of, like, I'm not happy about it. I want to know what happened. But in, like, retrospect, it kind of happens. You know, like, I didn't think we were going to win every game this year. And the nice thing about, the acceptable thing about losing in the Champions League, even though it's really, really hard now to, like, come back from that, is that it kind of doesn't stick. If we can come back and have some really good performances and we make it out of the group stages, it wipes away. Where this, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the first match of the season in the Premier League or the last match. Like, those points all count the same. So that's the way I've kind of talked myself into this, despite all of the statistical difficulties that we've given ourselves getting out of the group. Also, you know, I remember Young Boys in 2010.
Really, tell us more about Young Boys.
And once you experience Young Boys and being down 3-0 within 33 minutes, being down 2-0 really doesn't seem all that bad to a team you've heard about. Like, so, I mean, if you put it in perspective like that, you know, We're sitting pretty.
Nothing like Young Boys to put things into perspective. Michael, putting the existential tear of the first game against Young Boys of Bern from a few years ago aside, this result wasn't quite as disastrous as it might feel. Obviously, losing any Champions League game, especially a team that you should probably feel like you're beating at home, like Monaco, isn't good. But given the other results on the day, this isn't catastrophic by any means, right?
Yeah, the Cheska Bayer draw was good. Bayer appears to be not quite handling it, not doing great so far. They got beat pretty solidly by Gladbach this week. They just they lost to Eintracht Frankfurt and were pretty solidly beaten. So they're struggling. Cheska, I don't know if they're any good. I didn't watch the Leverkusen game. But right now, it's not the one positive I could put on this is it's not obvious at all what the worst team in the group is. Monaco came from Group D, but have been pretty good in Liga, whereas Leverkusen are struggling in the Bundesliga, and Cheska are doing whatever they're happening to do. I have no idea.
So
it's not obvious that, like, this was, like, looking at the group initially, you'd say, okay, this or the Cheska home match is the one we need to win because these are obviously the must wins. But it's sort of five relatively even games rather than having a clear cupcake and clear super hard games on the schedule. So Spurs, I think, can clearly come back from it.
Ben,
I think Monaco are definitely a better team than people were giving them credit for in the build-up to this.
Yeah, they didn't impress me much, though.
Like, I mean, especially after last season when we played them in Europa and we walked all over them with a B team. You know, I think a lot of people were expecting Monaco to just sort of be there for the taking and just roll over for us.
I think they kind of were. I mean, they converted their two best chances, maybe missed a third, but, like, I mean, we were beating the shit out of them for a lot of this match. We just couldn't score a goal. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think we were definitely a better side than Monaco. But, like, if Monaco finishes second in the group, like, it's not going to be that surprising. You know, like,
neither were them finishing fourth, honestly.
Right,
I don't think.
Exactly. Like Michael said, like, they're not like, well, this is the obvious. It's not like we're playing some, like, bullshit Eastern European garbage team. It's like, this is a legit contender for one of the major leagues. You know, they're fine. I think they're worse than us, and it was very unfortunate that we lost at home to a team like this. But, you know, you look at our group, and there's a lot of parity. You know, any order finishing would be unsurprising. You look at that and say, oh, yeah, Bayer, Monaco, okay, that's normal. You know, like,
yeah, Cheska finishing top would be the only thing that would really shock me.
I mean, and not necessarily. I mean, they were the pot one team. Like, they won their league last year. Like, yes, it's Russia, but, like,
none of you people have any idea how good they are.
Yeah,
right.
That is based entirely on my assessment of the Russian league and nothing about Cheska. You're right.
Right. I mean, like, they battled back from two goals down to draw against Bayer Leverkusen, who are a team that you would say are good.
They also beat out AVB to win the league, and we all know that can't be that impressive an achievement. So, you know. Who knows?
Yeah. The point is our group is fairly even. We should be the best team in it, but, you know, it's not going to be a bunch of cupcake games, and we're going to just waltz to first place. So, you know, we've got work to do, but, you know, none of it is beyond us. It helps that Bayer Leverkusen, one of their best players, Karim Bellarabi, just got hurt for the season. That's nice. You know, Chicharito.
The other one that got hurt.
No, Bellarabi got hurt. Chicharito smashed his hand. I don't know if he'll be healthy anytime soon. But, you know, there's reasons for hope and optimism. And, you know, we're a good team with a good squad. So this is by no means a death sentence. You know, you'd like to win your first game in the Champions League at home in front of a 90,000 people crowd.
Against the French team.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. Especially because we played really well. You know, we looked like a very good... We looked like we belonged in the Champions League.
You wonder what would have happened if Son didn't have that goal cleared off the goal line by that defender. You know, maybe that opens them up a little bit.
Well, I mean, the real thing that changed the game was... what's his name going off injured in, like, the fifth minute?
Yeah, Dinar.
Yeah, right? Dirar.
Yeah,
and then bringing on Thomas Lemar, who assisted the first goal and then scores the second one. I mean, you know, he's a really good young player, but he was left out because Gerard has a more kind of workmanlike job out on the right. And as soon as he goes off, like within the first 5-6 minutes of the game, that kind of changed, obviously, the complexion of everything.
So before we move on from the Champions League, Ben, I just want you to get your opinion on this. Who had a worse day at the office, Spurs or Bayer Leverkusen's social media guy?
Huh. Yeah, if you guys didn't see, Bayer Leverkusen was throwing a lot of shade Spurs away on Twitter.
The official account. The official account.
Yeah, the official Bayer Leverkusen account was talking a lot of shit and ended up having to eat their words very quickly when Cisco scored 2 goals very quickly to peg them back.
They committed the ultimate internet, the ultimate Twitter sin. They deleted their tweet, which is like, own up to it. If you're going to get owned, own up to it. Come on. But yeah, not a great day at the – hopefully they have a worse day, a similarly bad day on the pitch when they play us. This sort of Spurs had a performance against Monaco where I think we outplayed Monaco. I think we're all agreed that they kind of outplayed Monaco, but didn't get the number of goals that I think that play sort of warranted or that you would have expected based on it. I think we had a very similar performance against Sunderland this past weekend. Michael, is there – we'll get more in-depth in this game in a second, but is this just the variances of finishing here? Is there something Spurs are doing wrong? I know Moyes put together a fairly good last-ditch defensive effort. Lots of guys throwing their bodies in front of shots, lots of final passes getting cut out. But is there something Spurs are doing here, or is it just the luck of the draw?
I thought Spurs controlled the game against Sunderland much more than they did against Monaco. The Monaco game was – we were fine, but the Sunderland game we were just entirely in control of pretty much from minute one.
I think we gave up one quality chance, maybe two, it felt like.
Yeah, we had a couple, like, breakdowns at the back. Sunderland had some legit chances on the counter, but but basically none in the second half, and they created chances out of a very few situations where they could have. For the most part, every time they got the ball, Dembele or Wanyama was on top of them, closing them down, either slowing the attack down, turning into nothing, or winning the ball back. And we just, whereas in the Monaco game, it was a lot more back and forth. Monaco did a much better job of contesting midfield. Sunderland, I think, were not really trying to contest midfield, exactly. No. As you were saying, Greg, they wanted to sit back and frustrate us. I think they wanted to sit back about 15 yards further forward than they ended up doing. What we ended up doing was pushing them back to the edge of the box where we could get Sun and occasionally not so much Sissoko. Sun occasionally one of Sissoko or Walker running at them on the wings, and we could be and even when attacks broke down, they'd still lead to shots taken from 20 yards or so. And so Spurs just battered Sunderland, and I think this was this game, while usually we have attacking midfielder in the vein of Lamela or Eriksen who can try to sort of like pick a lock. For the most part, what our attack wants to do under Pochettino is smash people. It isn't sort of like, fragile brilliance and subtle attacks. There's not a lot subtle about Pochettino's attack. And this was that sort of turned up to 11. Control midfield and smash them until one of their center backs screws up and you can score an easy goal.
But I thought we saw, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we saw a real difference. Not that we weren't playing well before, but you can see how important the lock pickers are to this attack, which is largely based on physicality. But, as soon as we put Lamela on, I mean, he started carving up that defense with through balls. And I understand why he was rested. And honestly, I don't have a problem with it because it's Sunderland and, they played the way they played. So a battering ram isn't the worst idea. But, Lamela was instantly, just putting guys behind their defense with passes or almost putting guys behind their defense with passes. And, I think, we should have started with an Eriksen or Lamela in that lineup to give us that little bit of extra, subtlety to our game.
But the thing I like, though, is that we have we've got a league match and then a pretty close to must win Champions League match, and then we've got City. Like, we need to be able to rotate through our squad. That after the international break, we need to be able to win games against bad teams while resting guys like Eriksen and Lamella.
Yep, yep. And Harry Kane, who's going to get a whole lot of rest now, because he did some ligaments in it. It looks like 8 weeks is the prognosis. Brian, how terrified does this make you?
Yes. That's good. I think it's okay. I'm honestly less terrified than I usually am about Spurs injury stuff. Like, I remember how I felt when Jan Vertonghen went down last year, and I felt very much like it was the end of the world, and then Kevin Vimmer came and played really well. So I feel like this is the first year we've had, like, legitimately two strikers who are probably good, and if Kane is down, then this is the reason why we bought Jansen, and so this is an opportunity for him to get going, get his feet underneath him, play, you know, a good string of minutes, score some goals, and everything will be largely fine. So I'm not as worried as I usually am, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little concerning. I think a lot of people might be concerned because Jansen had his worst match in a Spurs shirt this past weekend.
I mean, I'm not sure if it's his worst match. He just made one really dumb decision that stands out.
I would say, by and large, Jansen has been very good. You know, he hasn't scored, but he has done all of the things you want a striker to do, and he's done it very well. So, in context, yeah, this is his worst match. And, you know, he missed that opportunity to play Lamella in for what would have been probably a certain goal.
That was mind-boggling. Shot
to outer space.
It wasn't just that he shot. There was a guy covering him. That was a bad decision on multiple.
It was bad, but I think, you know, by and large, what we've seen from Jansen has been very, very positive. And I think even if he is doing a lot of things well and not scoring, you know, I think we can be comfortable in the fact that between Lamella, Eriksen, Son, and Ali, like, we have goals in the team, you know, from other positions, that it won't be the end of the world if Jansen only scores like two or three goals in the next eight games. We'll be fine.
So I want to talk about Jansen and Kane a little bit. Vince, I'm curious as to your thoughts on this, because I was listening to the game podcast, which I don't know why I did it either. But they had their French guy and their old footballer guy, whose names are escaping me at the moment. They were talking about the game, and they were very full of praise for Sissoko, who we'll get to in a minute. But this is between them and Jonathan Wilson, I've heard a lot of professional football punditry really take a dump all over Jansen. They say he's not involved in link-up play. I think it's obvious, probably more weighted on the fact he hasn't scored goals yet. But they just say, they don't see it, or he's not ready, or Spurs should have gotten someone who's got a little more experience at a higher level. I mean, Vince, I've been very impressed by Jansen's play. I think he's really linked. I think he's really helped knit Spurs' attack together when he's played. I think he's played well alongside Kane. He seems to have that sort of, you know, like what Ben was saying. He just sort of understands what needs to be done to make this attack click. I mean, what do you think of Jansen as our primary striker for the next 2 months, probably?
Well, I think that because we watch Spurs week in, week out, we understand like how the press works. We understand how much like the strikers.
Yeah, but these guys aren't. I mean, they're dumb, but, you know, they're not.
I mean, so I think we're going to be looking for other things besides, does he score? Like, there's always going to be that faction of football fans and, you know, pundits who are like, well, if the striker doesn't score, and you alluded to this, that they're not fitting in well, that it's not working out. Of that might be to the fact that, like, against Palace, you know, he chipped the keeper and he missed. And, you know, he just made a stupid decision the other day. You know, Harry Kane doesn't score in the first month of a season, and these are the same people that were saying, like, oh, is he 1 year wonder? So, I tend to trust my eyes, you know, trust your eyes and all these other things that he seems to be doing well, will probably work out in the end. And it's specifically that Pochettino seemed to think that he was, like, the perfect fit for the club. So I think it's going to work out. I think everything's going to come good. There's nothing I've seen from him that says he can't hack it or he can't play at this level.
Michael, do you think we're going to change the way we play in any significant way with Jansen as opposed to Kane?
For the most part, no. I think that with Jansen, it'll be somewhat more useful to have those more direct players alongside him, because he's not quite as dependent on movement as Kane. He likes to take up dangerous positions and have players run off of him a little bit more. But I think that Spurs this season, even when we play a quasi 4-4-2, we're really just being Spurs and playing Pochettino's style. It's small tweaks. That's what we do. And there'll be small tweaks that make Jansen fit better. But for the most part, we're just going to keep doing the thing that we do. Unfit for Purpose on Twitter called it a nutty smashing. I think it's a pretty good summary. At various times this year, we're going to be doing different kinds of naughty smashing. But that's basically what we're going to do.
You're saying we're naughty boys. This is essentially what you're saying.
So one of the, in terms of tactical tweaks, Jake wrote a piece on the site today about, you know, what does it look like when Kane leaves for the next 2 months. And one of the things he highlighted was the way Kane is very good at moving into the channels and picking up the ball in wide spaces, and particularly in that relationship with Dele Alli, who, you know, tends to play on the left nominally, but is obviously not a left winger. And he does a lot of movement into the middle off of Kane's runs wide. Jansen, you know, has not shown that same proclivity for occupying those wide spaces and working the channels the same way. And there may be an issue with him and Alli, you know, not being able to get that switch on the way that Alli and Kane do so well. And I think to that, you know, there may be an argument that Heung-min Son deserves a spot in the lineup with Jansen, because Son is much more comfortable playing as like a true wide forward, staying in wide positions and moving in from wide positions with the ball rather than off the ball like Dele Alli. I think that might be the only kind of tactical tweak we might see, you know, with our lineup with Jansen in the side. But otherwise, you know, he does a lot of similar things that Kane does. They're both very well-rounded strikers. And I think it's pretty clear why we bought Jansen to be Kane's backup, because it's not going to require a ton of adjustment from how we play.
And if I can, like, I just remembered, you know, not even him getting in good goal scoring positions, but I forget if it was against Palace, but I think he put in a through ball for Danny Rose, where like Danny Rose took a bad touch, but otherwise, like, if Danny took a good touch, like, he probably would have been clear on, you know, one on one with the keeper and could have scored very easily. So like that whole idea that he can't link up, I think, is just like fallacy. It's kind of made up.
No, I think
he's done it really well in almost all of the games.
He looks like he fits in our offense, and he's probably not going to be Harry Kane, but it should. You know, I'm as reasonably confident in him. I feel better than, I think having a guy like Son or Clinton up there would be fine, but I feel better about, you know, Jansen up there than I would about them.
I want to ask a question that I asked before the pod, but I want you guys to go on record so everybody can know it. Is there anything Jansen can do over the next 2 months that means he keeps his spot when Kane is healthy again?
No.
Well, this is a different question than you asked before the pod.
That was exactly
is there anything
the
Jansen can do such that he remains a starter? Absolutely.
In lieu of Harry Kane. Sorry. But, you're right.
There's nothing that's going to take away. Kane is not losing his starting spot. That's not a thing.
The only two things that I think Jansen can do over the next few months is maybe convince Spurs to not rush Kane back as quick if he needs it, and maybe force Spurs to play in a two-striker set more often if he's really just banging in goals. But no, Harry Kane's coming back when he's healthy. Does anyone disagree with this?
I mean,
nope. Ben, go ahead.
Brian, I posed the question.
I mean, if Jansen scores, you know, 20, 30 goals in the next 2 months, then then definitely he can keep his starting job. But, I mean, you know, short of some miraculous scoring run, something Ronaldo-esque, no, there's no way.
Who makes way, then, if we go to a two-striker system to accommodate Jansen scoring 8 goals in 8 games or whatever?
Dele, Wanyama, maybe
Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen sucks. So.
It's probably Dele Alli.
We're
not playing a total first-choice 11 in that many of our games for the next few months.
Well, when we're in the Champions League final, I'll be interested to see who makes way for Vincent Jansen. Moving on, we have another new boy to talk about who's given us some minutes to watch him. Moussa Sissoko started against Sunderland and has gotten some sub minutes in a couple matches before that. We all had various and sundry hot takes on Sissoko. Ben.
Yep.
Yeah, you tend to think our purchases suck after we buy them. What do you think of Sissoko?
I don't think that's very well founded.
Uh-huh.
Just the bad purchases. So.
Okay, sure. What do you think of Sissoko after now that he's had his first full start for Spurs?
Look, I think, you know, first of all, you know, leave the price tag aside. Like, that's a thing that happened in the summer. It should have no bearing on how we evaluate him going forward. It's irrelevant. He's on the team, and now we should just look at how he fits into that team. That said, I don't think, you know, he wasn't amazing by any means, but I thought he was a good contributor. He did a lot of things well. He did a lot of things, you know, less well than you would hope. But, you know, for a guy in his first start in this team, you know, I can't say I was, like, completely disappointed. He had a lot of good runs. He played some good balls. You know, he beat his man a few times.
I thought one of the things that he did really well was his defensive work, which I think really helped Walker enter the game offensively in ways that he isn't always able to do. I mean, I know it's Sunderland, and I know they weren't exactly scorching us up the flanks or anything, but considering some of the shit we heard about him when he was at Newcastle, like, I was, you know, it's a low bar to clear, but, you know, he seemed to be busting his ass defensively.
That's the thing about Sissoko. Like, on paper, like, he's a guy who is defensively sound, who works really hard, who's combative on and off the ball. You know, in practice at Newcastle, he was often very lazy, very disinterested, very blasé. You know, so in terms of attitude, like, this was nice to see, but in terms of ability, it's not that surprising to see, you know, that he can track back and cover, because we know he can do that.
Yeah, I guess it's just gonna be nice a matter to see it actually happen.
Right, and you know, in a debut, if he's not doing that, then, you know, we need to worry. Because if he can't get psyched up for that, then, you know, we're going to have a long season ahead of us. But, you know, I think, you know, at Newcastle, Moussa Sissoko walked into the team no matter what he did. You know, at Spurs, he's going to be lucky to play. You know, he's the fifth choice attacking midfielder. You know, he's got to work for it. And I think he knows that. He's got to know that. You know, he's just not going to get minutes if he comes in and doesn't show up. So, you know, I think not seeing Sissoko give a shit isn't really going to be a problem this year.
Here's hoping. Brian, what do you think of Moussa's first game for Spurs?
Well, he's fine. You know, he didn't do anything super impressive, but, you know, he also looked marginally more energetic than he ever did at Newcastle. He looks closer to the France version of Moussa Sissoko than the Newcastle version. So, you know, he's not going to be a superstar for us, but I think in the role that we're going to ask him to play, he'll be fine. So I'm not willing to write him off as shitty and a waste of £30 million yet.
Vince, where do you think Sissoko fits into our team moving forward?
I think it's nice to have another player who can carry the ball. You know, pass players and actually, like, threaten the back line. I mean, I know we have Dembele right now who can kind of, like, you know, bring the ball from defense to attack, you know, without, you know, by dribbling, ghosting pass players. And I think that like Sissoko brings that threat where if you want to press him, you know, and really try to win the ball that quickly, you do run that risk of like, if he controls it and manages to dribble past you, that there's a lot of problems. So it's not like that happened a lot against Sunderland, but you could see that threat if that were to be something that the other team wanted to do. So I like that kind of like, I guess, you know, threat that he poses that we haven't really seen yet. You know, as for everything else, you know, it's to be seen. I don't know.
So we have failed to address probably the most important thing that happened on Sunday. Michael, how do you think it affected Ronaldo and Messi's game that the best football player in the world returned to Spurs midfield this weekend? I mean, do you think it's going to affect the race for the Ballon d'Or?
I mean, I think that, you know, obviously the Ballon d'Or voters continue to focus only on goals and only want to honor the players from the biggest teams in the world. And it's really hard for me to, like, make jokes about Moussa Dembélé being great because in my head, like...
Who's making jokes?
I really honestly think that he's one of the best few players in the Premier League.
He's excellent, and he doesn't see a lot of guys like him.
In your team, and then you control midfield.
Yes, he's incredible.
Oh, hey, look, we controlled midfield. How'd that happen? Oh, we put Moussa Dembélé in there. He did stuff. Like, and the value in that, like, that's, I mean, these are things that I'm still very much at work on. I think that, like, I really think that soccer fans, even though they can sort of conceptually, like, oh, yeah, controlling midfield, that's really great. But I think that if we can start putting numbers on what it means to like, what it means that every time Sunderland started moving the ball through midfield, they had to slow down or stop or they just turned it over. Like, that's incredibly valuable. Every one of those is a new possession, a new opportunity to attack. Every one of those is a situation where Sunderland isn't going to score or isn't even going to be able to use defensive possession to slow us down. And what he created in the Sunderland game was just fantastic.
He's great. And I
got an idea.
Go for it, Vince.
Hear me out, Michael. Here's a numbers idea. When Moussa Dembélé starts in the midfield, we can call it a one. You have a one midfield. When he doesn't start in your midfield, you have a zero. So we could just make it a binary. So the one is Moussa Dembélé is there. The zero is he's not there. Thoughts?
I'm not following. How do you
so know? Every team has 38 zeros, and Tottenham has as many ones as Moussa Dembélé plays. So obviously that's more than zero.
Correct.
Is that where you're going, Vince?
I like that.
Yes.
I think this should be the new system by which we award the Ballon d'Or. I think it's bulletproof.
Yep.
No,
Messi had zero games in which he was Moussa Dembélé, and thus he does not win the Ballon d'Or. Moussa Dembélé, on the other hand, was Moussa Dembélé in nearly all of his matches.
And you said you didn't understand it.
Unfortunately, yeah. Unfortunately, this statistic was implemented before Moussa got Spurs to spell his name correctly, so thus he is ineligible for the statistic. I think.
So speaking of Dembélé,
it's funny because that was their plan all along. I think that it's easy to sort of the easy thing to look at Dembélé and get really excited about are these sort of, you know, like and one videos of him like playing keep away with like Liverpool's entire midfield. And that's obviously important and fun to watch, but the way that, because remember, Spurs really first figured out how to really use, or Pochettino at least, figured out how to really use him as a forward destroyer, and the way he breaks up play, the way he sort of links play, even if it's passing, isn't the most stellar part of his game. It's just, it's really incredible, and he's very great, and I'm glad he's become such an important part of this team, and I'm glad we extended him last year, because I hope we have Moussa Dembélé until Moussa Dembélé can't be very good at soccer anymore. Ben, you were saying.
Yeah, well, first of all, there's nobody in world football like Moussa Dembélé. Moussa Dembélé is one of the best dribblers in the world. You know, he is consistently,
it's one of the
you
strongest
know, like a
dribblers 90% in the world.
Passing player. Like, he does not lose the ball in possession. He doesn't give it away. He doesn't lose it in possession. And pairs that with phenomenal defensive ability. Like, there's just nobody who marries those both sides of the ball skill sets the way Dembele does. He is wholly unique and wholly wonderful, and he deserves the Ballon d'Or every year. But I think going back to the Monaco game, you know, Michael talked about how, like, we were a little less compact. You know, we let chances go back the other direction. Monaco had their own counters, etc. You know, and this was the first time that Pochettino played a very disrespectful lineup that didn't feature Dier and Wanyama. It only featured Dele Alli in midfield. And I think, you know, just comparing those two matches and seeing what Dembele brings to the table on the defensive end, and then also the fact that we put 31 shots in, 19 shots in the first half, which is a record for the season, you know, like, it just, he just makes every aspect of our game better.
Well, just, I mean, look at that Monaco game. Like, we put him in at halftime, and, you know, maybe we still didn't have that cutting edge that you want to see out of Spurs, but it sure as hell blunted Monaco's, I mean, for whatever little edge there was there. I mean, Spurs had much more control of that game, and certainly looked like a more dangerous team than Monaco did in the second half. I mean, he's so integral to our attack, and he is a slightly estranged player. There's not a lot of players like him, so...
There's nobody like
him. So I think it's interesting that, you know, like, AVB sort of figured out how to use him for a while, but I think that had more to do with, like, he figured out how to use Sandro, and he kind of lucked into Dembele. Like, you know, like, Pochettino has really stumbled on a really quite excellent way, two quite excellent ways, honestly, because he had him in that forward destroyer role way back when that was pretty effective. And, you know, it's really delightful, because it sure as hell looked like he was on his way out after his first season here, Pochettino's first season here. And it's just really great that we've completely integrated into his team, and we sort of realize what an important player we have. And he's so much fun to watch, and I love that we have him, and I never wanted to leave or get old. I love you, Moussa Dembele. Please don't go.
It's amazing that he's already old, like, by Tottenham standards. He might as well be, like, somebody's grandfather.
What worries me the most now is Roberto Martinez, as dumb as he might be, is probably less dumb than Wilmots. So he might actually play him for Belgium.
He didn't over the international break. Yes. He got 45 minutes across two games.
Yes. So I hope he continues that tradition of not using Moussa for Belgium and making sure he's very well rested after an international break for us. So here's hoping that keeps up. But yeah, Moussa Dembele is the best, and I think we're all very happy that he's back. Yeah, so guys, let's hit up a couple questions before we wrap this bad boy up. We have a multi-part question from Haley Bachrock, which I'm probably mispronouncing. Haley, if you want to correct me on that, I'd be happy to get it right from now on. But before we get to her, we have one on Twitter from @GoDarkHorse. That is.
Hey, speaking of Haley, real quick, she wrote a great piece about her fandom and Harry Kane for Unusual Efforts, which is a site by all female sports writers that is a must read. And you know, she is a Spurs fan and a good writer, and you should absolutely check it out.
Yep, it's a great article. But before we get to her, sorry, Haley, I probably should have done this in a better order. I want to ask this question from Go Dark Horse. This is for all of you. Ben, I'll start with you. If Harry Kane were to choose someone on the squad to perform ankle treatment or surgery, who would he choose?
To perform his surgery?
Yes, or treatment.
Holy shit. I would hope he would go to a doctor.
Yeah, no. He's got to find someone on the squad. So the Spurs are going to sign Socrates and resurrect him from the grave. I think he's out of
line. It's definitely Heung-Min Son. Why are we even talking about that?
Why is it Heung-Min Son, Brian? Is it going to cut the circulation off when he does surgery?
No, I mean, his parents always wanted him to be a doctor, okay?
Oh, my God.
He can tie a meme tourniquet.
Brian.
What? I feel like that's a true thing.
No, Brian, that's a racist.
It's Brian's
bad.
Truth. It's Brian's,
it's Brian's
truth.
Brand is what it is. Ben, you want to finish up? Or are you just going to stand there and let
Brian's... Toby Alderweireld is probably the steadiest guy on the team who, despite being the best center back in the league, never gets enough credit. I guarantee you if he went to med school, he would be the best doctor in the world also. So I feel like he could figure it out.
Vince.
I feel like Ben has missed the obvious answer here.
Obviously.
I'm a little disappointed in him that it's Tom Carroll. because Tom Carroll needs to be in the middle of the action. He's the best under pressure, pulling the strings, and that's really what the surgeon is, dictating the tempo and making sure that the team is performing correctly. So I think that it would be Tom Carroll.
I don't think there. You know what doctors do, Vince.
Hugman's son, also good with strings.
Michael. No, did Michael just tap out for our bald racism? Or is he on mute?
All right. Good answer.
He is just staying out of this one.
What do you got, Greg?
So it's Dembele. See, now he goes. I had now. Mute on. I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I had my mute button on while I was giving the dog a treat. So, but I have an important answer, which is that it's Dembele because he doesn't have a nickname. And I think he would be a great player to start bringing back the doctor nickname. The doctor of dribbling, Dr. Dembele.
Because he cuts over Dembele has a nickname, and
it's Moose.
Or the scalpel, that could be another nickname.
Moose isn't a nickname, it's just like a short... It's like Sonny being a nickname.
That's a nickname! Plus, those are both nicknames! What? How is that not a nickname?
Okay.
Nickname is, it's a tweak on your name.
Okay. So the answer I think the answer here, you want to go with someone who knows what they're doing with ankles, and I don't think there's anyone on this team who knows more about how ankles work.
So we have a doctor, and it's Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
He is the doc, obviously.
Okay, stop it, Beth. No, you want to go with someone who knows the most about ankles, and that is clearly Eric Lamella, who makes a habit of trying to break other people's ankles. So I think Eric Lamella is probably very well-versed in how ankles work. So I would go with him.
First engineer an ankle.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I know how it breaks, so I know how to put it back together.
And to be clear, Christian Eriksen is a Time Lord. He's not the Doctor.
Yeah, he just regenerates.
We already know which Time Lord is the Doctor. We don't know which Time Lord Christian Eriksen is.
Well, no, Christian Eriksen is Musa Dembele and Hugo Lloris.
This all sounds very complicated.
Yeah, our internal fan fiction continuity for Christian Eriksen is a little out there. And his arch nemesis Tom Glover, you know, it just gets a little confusing. Yeah,
doesn't Tom Glover have to be a doctor to do all the stuff that he does?
He's self trained.
Yeah.
He's self trained. No board would certify him. So let's move on to Haley's questions and get out of this film. First off, Michael, where is Vimmer?
Where is Vimmer? I bet he's hurt, right? He's hurt, guys. That's it, right? He's hurt, and that's why he's not playing. I'm sure he's hurt.
I've seen a lot of pictures of...
He's hurt. I don't see anything to worry about anything other than that. He's obviously hurt.
I've seen a lot of pictures of Tom Glover lately. I haven't seen a lot of pictures of Kevin Vimmer. I don't know if that means anything. I'm just putting it out there. It's not admissible in a court of law, but it's interesting. Brian, who on this team makes a hit true crime podcast about what happened to Kevin Vimmer?
Okay, so now is it just one person? Because, really you need a podcaster and a sidekick to have any sort of effective podcast.
That's right. This podcast is nothing without the sidekick. I get that.
That's not what I meant.
So kind of like Ryan Mason sidekicking the midfield off the bench, right?
Yeah, kind of. The obvious podcasting duo is Deli and Eric Dyer. But they don't really seem like true crime.
They seem more of a morning zoo crew, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. It'd be very lad humor.
Deli and the douche.
Yeah. So I think that the true crime guys are going to be people who are the most interested in a resolution to the Vimmer situation. So it's Toby and Jan. I think we all know that Jan is very into film noir and detective stuff. So Jan and Toby have a very vested interest in solving the mystery that surrounds Kevin.
Do we think
Vimmer.
This podcast, in addition to investigating what happened to Vimmer, investigates their guilt over their complicity in what happened to Vimmer and how they didn't have anything to do with it, but they didn't ask any questions because it benefited them?
I mean, I think that's a useful forum for working out that guilt.
So Cameron Carter-Vickers, suspect number one, or...
Obviously, yeah.
Well, that's the next part of the question. Well, that's not the next part of the question, but yeah. I think Cameron Carter-Vickers, because Poach is praising him up to the moon lately.
You know, you're also forgetting the obvious answer of Hungman's son, his Kevin Vimmer's best friend. Like, son took Vimmer with him to the Asian Footballer of the Year Awards.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Both in tuxes.
They love each other. It's amazing.
I've answered with Hungman's son too many times already on this podcast. So
there's no way that if someone is doing investigative journalism about what happened to Kevin Vimmer, his best friend isn't spearheading that movement.
I have faith that he can unravel this mystery.
I think we're overlooking. See, I think Stillwater's run deep. I think who would be interested intellectually in the fate of another human being and what that says about that man's loss and his impact on Tottenham Hotspur, on the London community, on Austria. I think it's Hugo Lloris. I think in games like Sunderland, where he has nothing to do, he just sits back there and thinks, I wonder what happened to Kevin. Why is he no longer in the team? Why do I no longer see him around the training ground? What was up with that shirt he was wearing when he signed that contract extension a few weeks ago? Why did he sign a contract extension and then stop getting played for Spurs? All these are very thought-provoking questions, and I think Hugo Lloris is probably the only person asking them, partly when he's standing on the field with nothing to do, and also when he's getting secretly terrible haircuts. But Vince, who do you think is doing this podcast?
And I think he's examining it from like Foucault's lens about like why is Pochettino exerting his power over Vimmer in this way, and what is the reason for it?
I think that's good.
So I'm just actually agreeing with you, but I think he comes at it through the Foucault lens of control and power.
Michael,
I'm going a different. I think Harry Kane's podcast is, where's Kevin Vimmer? I don't know. And then he goes up and he goes, hello, I'm Harry Kane. Have you seen Kevin Vimmer? No. Thank you very much.
So is it
I'm
like that?
Find someone else.
Is it like that show with Ricky?
It's a half hour of that.
Is it like that show with Ricky Gervais's really stupid friend where he goes to like India and stuff? Is it just that?
No, it's very focused. He doesn't know where Kevin Vimmer is, and he's trying to find him. And, like, occasionally, like, I'm out under a rock. Kevin Vimmer's not under the rock. I found him in the peak. And it moves up.
he is going to have a lot of time on his hands, so maybe this is how he fills his rehab time.
I think he lets his dog sniff, like, Kevin Vimmer's clothes on air, even though nobody can see it. And he, like, explains what's happening, and then he goes, do you guys know where he is? And then, like, they walk around.
No, the dog starts barking at an NFL game he has on, so Harry travels to, like, Gillette Stadium in New England to, like, Tom Brady, do you know where Kevin Vimmer is? Finally.
Is Harry Kane's favorite game I Spy? Is that, like,
no,
the pinnacle of entertainment for him?
It's the NFL. Like, you know. Yeah, he likes watching men hit each other, apparently. So, finally, our final question from Haley related to this is, on this podcast, regardless of who does it, who comes off as really shifty, but is actually totally innocent? Ben? Like, what player on Spurs comes off as a really shifty, suspicious individual, even if they didn't commit the crime?
I thought you meant on our podcast.
Well, that too.
We're all going to go around and talk about how you're shifty and everything.
Okay, well, if you really want to, we can do that too.
No, I mean, it's Vince. Everybody knows that. He is obviously the backup trying to put somebody in the hospital so he can take their spot. No question.
And he has his top connections.
But the situation is reversed for Kevin Vimmer. So the obvious answer is Jan Vertonghen. You know, he is there. He has buried Kevin Vimmer in a hole somewhere so he doesn't lose his spot as the current worst player in our first 11.
Wait. It's who's shifty but is actually innocent.
But he's actually innocent. That's right. I don't think.
Sorry.
Way to save it, man.
I didn't see that coming.
Whoa.
What a twist. I'm like M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah. It's not Vertonghen. Even though every sign would point to Vertonghen, it's not him. Vertonghen doesn't give a fuck.
I think it's got to be Tom Carroll. We have documented on Cartilage Free Captain Tom Carroll's drinking habits, his drug habits,
his association with organized crime figures, his feuds with organized crime figures, his proclivity for violence, his love of tattoos under his uniform. I think all these things point towards a very suspicious, violent lifestyle that he is trying to escape from or is crushed under the weight of, and comes off as very shifty, but he had nothing to do with Kevin Bimmer. Michael?
Yeah, I'm on mute again.
Good to know. Good to know. Anyone else? Brian, Vince?
I think Kyle Walker. I mean, I don't know why. I just, like, just based on
Sheffield accent.
Yeah, it is the accent and the weirdly high pitched voice. You know, I think that's I think he would call some undue attention to himself, but he really is just genuinely interested in the answer to where Kevin Vimmer is.
Vince?
Yeah, I'm gonna go on mute.
Good talk, guys. Good talk.
Who's gonna be the most, like, you know, earnest participant in Harry Kane's, you know, where is Kevin Vimmer game?
I mean the other option is Heung-min's son is gonna play the "I lost my lover" card, but really it was a lover's quarrel, and that's where Kevin Vimmer went. I think that's the real culprit.
I think Jansen would be the most, like, enthusiastic participant. He's trying to really earn Harry Kane's, like, friendship and trust, but it all goes with him trying to, like, headbutt people and like hit them with his ass. Like, I think that's basically how Jansen would try to help Kane. It's like
we really need to come up with a bit for Jansen.
Yeah,
Jansen is the muscle is perfect. Harry Kane is like asking a man on the street, like, "Have you seen Kevin Vimmer?" It's like, "I don't know who Kevin Vimmer is." You have seen headbutt, elbow. tell Harry what you know.
How do you say "hit with your ass" in Dutch?
Jansen, that's how you say it. Yeah.
Just checking people the whole time.
Yeah. Kane just asks him, he turns back to his microphone. "Well, we don't know what happened to him," and back he's just checking the person out of the frame.
Jansen comes flying from off screen.
And then he just, like, when the cops come by, he's like, "What did I do? I don't know what happened.
I was just asking questions about my friend Kevin Vimmer, whom I can't find.
I was just asking questions. Nothing's wrong here." Okay. And on that note, I think this has been a very insightful podcast that will hopefully lead somebody to create a podcast focused on what actually happened to Kevin Vimmer and that really weird shirt he was wearing to his contract signing. Seriously, guys, I don't know what the fuck was up with that shirt. It's really strange. It's like a butler's shirt. Like, it's really weird. I don't know. Maybe that's why he disappeared. Maybe it was a fashion faux pas too far.
The best butler did it.
He was almost certainly wearing jorts. Under the table, like, just without a doubt,
designer jorts. On that note, I think it's time to wrap this podcast up. It's been good talking to you guys again. Ben Daniels, where on the Sidekick Twitter can people find you?
I don't want to answer this. If I answer honestly, I get criticized for my real Twitter handle. But that joke is, "Oh, Ben's making a stupid joke again." So. Fuck it. You can't find me on Twitter. Yeah. Don't talk to me.
Go find Ben at Gary Revere on Twitter. Talk to him about wrestling. He loves that. Next up, Brian, where can people find you on the internets?
I am at Brian with a Y, THFC on Twitter.
Michael Cayley, where can people find you online?
All right. Well, I have another podcast called The Double Pivot.
Really?
Don't listen to it at all.
I know. I listen to it every week. I don't know. I assume all the rest of you do, too.
Are we contractually obligated to refer to you as Other Mike?
No, I won this week. I'm Mike again.
Oh, okay. I haven't listened to this week's episode, so.
Oh, we haven't recorded yet. Yeah,
I haven't listened to any week's episode, Michael.
But yeah, so
we'll know who the podcast will be focused on.
On the writing course at ESPN and Washington Post, and you can follow me on Twitter, obviously, at Gary Rootbeer. That's the first name Gary, and then the drink Rootbeer. All one word, Gary Rootbeer.
All one word. Next up, Vince, how about you?
You can find me. I have two Twitter handles because I have multiple interests. So you can find me at Brett Rambo, where we can talk about my Dembele skepticism. and he's just not really that good. And at Gary Rootbeer, where we can talk about all things Serie A.
Okay. Finally, you can find me. I've got two different accounts. I have my soccer account, which is at Skipjack 0079. And then I have my wrestling and comic book and Baltimore Orioles focused account, which is at Gary Rootbeer on Twitter. And I urge all of you to go follow it and just send as many wrestling gifts to that account as you can. I can't recommend it enough. That's it, guys. Good podcast. Good week. Come on, you Spurs.